The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Now, you may have heard Ian Guider in yesterday's business news tell us about this Department of Finance report, which suggests that as many as 800,000 jobs could be at risk from the import of artificial intelligence. 800,000 jobs, about a third of the workforce, and particularly vulnerable apparently are accountants, computer technicians, lab workers, but many, many more. If you have a doctorate, apparently 95% of people with a doctorate are in roles highly exposed to AI. The better educated you are, perhaps, the more at risk you are to being replaced. We have two guests with us. In a moment, we talk to Elaine Burke, host of the For Tech's Sake podcast. But first, Neil MacDonald, chief executive of ISME. Do you foresee this many jobs been lost?
No, Matt, we don't see that many jobs been lost. We do see an impact on the workforce of that size. In other words, that people are going to be doing different jobs, or they're going to have to retrain, or the nature of the job is going to change. But we're optimistic about it in the long run, in that what we see AI doing is it's almost like the introduction of the internal combustion engine or the internet. It's actually going to simplify things, make the mundane or the boring jobs easier. But what it's going to do is result in a whole plethora of different jobs. So people are going to be doing different things a number of years into the adoption of AI. But we're not going to see a third of the workforce out of work in our estimation.
Elaine Burke, what do you think? Could a third of jobs go?
I think it's definitely, this is more about impact and a shift in terms of the labour market. So what you do see with any kind of technology that gets broadly adopted, because of its ease of use, of its efficiency, of various advantages in that kind of case, that the workforce kind of shifts around it. So we no longer have people that literally collect phone lines because we have the technology that does that by itself. That was once a job. So this is something that does happen. And say on factory floors, we've removed people from some operations on factory floors, let machines do that. But then what you need is people to operate those machines, people to service those machines, people to run diagnostics on those machines and be able to upgrade them and build them. So while some jobs may not exist in years to come because of technology shifts and changes, what happens is there's also new jobs are created as well. And an MIT report on this found that 60% of jobs in the US today didn't exist in 1940. And that pace of change does seem to be increasing. So we could be looking at maybe some of these jobs will be disrupted, maybe even supplanted, but there could be new jobs created around that we don't even know what they are yet.
But mightn't those new jobs be filled by AI rather than by people?
Well, I mean, if you're talking about, actually, something to note about this report is it's not talking about generative AI. So that's one big caveat about it. It's based on an assessment of AI that's from a 2021 study. And that predates the release of things that we're hearing about in the news all the time, like ChatGPT and other generative AI platforms. So there's actually a lot more research needed here in that context in terms of generative AI.
Sorry, a couple of things jump out at me as a relation to that, Elaine. First of all, if the report is outdated, could it be that the dangers are actually far higher because of the likes of generative AI now? Or could it be that to get to an up-to-date report, we actually need to apply generative AI because it would do the job much faster than it seems is possible by the Department of Finance?
Yeah, that's actually not a bad idea, but it would certainly still need a person's oversight because generative AI, as it currently exists, has limitations in terms of its accuracy and its peak performance. You do need that human in the loop still and giving it oversight and doing checks and balances. And it's a different level of checks and balances than you think with a junior employee, because with a junior employee, you would probably know where they're going to go wrong. You would know the common pitfalls, whereas with the generative AI, Lord knows where it's going to go wrong. That can actually be hard to quantify. So you do have to check things a little bit more thoroughly when it comes to this kind of technology. So people would definitely probably be hearing what I'm saying there and think, oh God, there's probably an even higher risk if you include generative AI in the equation. But as well as that limitation in terms of its performance compared to a highly experienced person in the job who understands all the nuances of a role and things like that, there's also physical environmental limitations to generative AI. So what we're getting is a lot of companies talking about this technology and its potential if it's adopted across the board by every business, by every individual at work. But the reality is, if it were to do that, the energy impact, the carbon footprint, even just the existence of enough chips to power it and to power the service to do that, I don't think that that's really borne out into reality. So we also need to take those claims with a pinch of salt. This vision of a future where we're all using generative AI, that has a lot of caveats to it as well, and would take a lot more than what these companies currently are able to provide in that. They're mostly operating these systems at a loss as it stands now.
Neil MacDonald, something else that strikes me out of all of this is that would small and medium enterprises be financially able to invest in these particular tools? And would their employees be willing to undergo the type of retraining that might be required?
I don't think that. I think that will be a commercial imperative for some of them, Matt. In other words, I don't think they're going to be able to stay in the commercial races unless they do engage in some areas. A lot of what we have been talking about in terms of AI over the last year and a bit since ChatGPT came out has been about large language models, and they're likely to prove less impactful, these broad spectrum AI applications, than the much narrower, very technical ones where you are actually likely to see some displacement, but also new job generation. So, you know, we've been asked about courses now in prompt engineering, for example. I certainly hadn't heard of that 6 months ago, but that's now a new thing. Even though AI models and machines will be able to do a lot of work that people previously did, they still have to be told what to do. They're not sentient. They don't go off and decide what to do themselves. So there will be a human in the loop, but they'll be in a much more directive role.
Because I'm looking at this, Neil, the report, and I mentioned already the likes of lab technicians and accountants has been particularly vulnerable. But also in the list, you have IT operations technicians who could be replaced, cannibalized almost by AI. You also have telephone salespeople and receptionists. But won't most people want to interact with businesses, with humans, rather than already is the case for many people that they try and get on to customer service, or they try and conduct a purchase, and they get very irritated by being met by artificial intelligence voices and chatbots rather than dealing with real people?
Yes, they do. And you have seen, for example, our banks told, for example, to get that aspect of their customer service to sharpen it. What various institutions are, though, in the longer run looking at AI doing is where something is intensely rules-based, the far more simple queries can actually be dealt with AI, and you will have a human in the loop, but at the end of that loop to resolve an issue which can't be resolved simply by a rules-based process. So we ultimately we see humans involved but doing different things than they were doing before.
And one other thing, and I suppose, Elaine, you have dispelled some of the fears for us that there could be 800,000 jobs at risk. But another thing this report suggests that women are slightly more exposed to the impact, because men are overrepresented in industries like construction and agriculture, where the jobs impact apparently is going to be weaker. And about a third of workers in like the legal profession, medicine, librarians and others, they may actually be females.
Yeah, that's something that's quite striking in the report as well. And it actually kind of holds a mirror up to those gender divisions across these different roles, which is also something worth talking about and exploring. But I think something that you've hit upon there quite astutely, Matt, is that this report is definitely written from the perspective of how businesses behave and at the point of view of the business agenda, which is do more, spend less, make more, spend less. So if they can get what's said in this report is more capital per worker, if that goes up, they'll be happy out. But will that mean the quality of their services is better because they might lack that human touch? It may become that the differentiator for really innovative companies in the future is having more of a human touch and a human interface, because that is what people actually do want and are responsive to. And when you think about those roles that we see primarily occupied by women in that administrative space, yes, they may be doing tasks and routine functions that can be outsourced to an AI or something like that. But often what women in those roles tend to do as well is handle a lot of emotional labor of a workforce, doing things like thinking of picking up a birthday cake for someone and boosting morale and hosting things and stuff like that. Those are jobs in a workplace that are unpaid, thankless, and often land on women. And if you take that out of the equation, if these women are all supplanted by AIs, well, then you also lose a little bit of heart and soul of your workforce as well.
We've got to leave it there. Elaine Burke, host of the For Tech's Sake podcast, thank you very much. And Neil MacDonald, chief executive of ISME.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper, weekdays from 4:30. Today.